Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Defining Intellectual Disability and the Eighth Amendment Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 29, 2016, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Moore v. Texas. In 1980, Bobby James Moore was convicted of capital murder for the shooting of James McCarple, a 70-year-old store clerk in Houston, Texas. Moore was convicted and received a death sentence, which was affirmed on appeal. After a federal court granted habeas corpus relief, a new punishment hearing occurred in 2001, and Moore was again sentenced to the death penalty. His sentence was again affirmed on appeal. Moore sought state habeas relief and argued that, under the U.S. Supreme Court's 2002 decision in Atkins v. Virginia, he was exempt from execution because he was intellectually disabled. The state court granted habeas relief based on Moore's Atkins argument, applying a definition of intellectual disability used by the American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities. The Court of Criminal Appeals of Texas reversed the grant, noting that the Texas legislature had not yet passed Atkins legislation, and the AAIDD definition of intellectual disability diverged from that previously adopted by Texas courts in the wake of Atkins, a 1992 definition used by AAIDD's predecessor, the American Association on Mental Retardation, as well as the Texas Health and Safety Code. Moore, the Court of Appeals held, ultimately failed to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that he was intellectually disabled within the meaning of Atkins, as applied by Texas courts. The question before the U.S. Supreme Court is whether it violates the Eighth Amendment and the court's decisions in Hall v. Florida and Atkins v. Virginia to prohibit the use of current medical standards on intellectual disability, and require the use of outdated medical standards in determining whether an individual may be executed. To discuss the case, we have Kent S. Scheidegger, who is legal director and general counsel for the Criminal Justice Legal Foundation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Scheidegger.
This case involves Bobby James Moore, who is a habitual criminal, and he and two accomplices robbed a supermarket in Houston, Texas. Moore was armed with a shotgun. A surviving employee of the store testified that Moore blew the head off James McCarble, a 70-year-old employee of the store who was offering no resistance. The case involves the exemption from the death penalty for intellectually disabled persons, and understanding that issue requires more than the usual amount of background, so I hope you'll bear with me for a rather extended explanation. The United States Supreme Court has not been consistent in its decisions regarding what the Constitution requires when a capital defendant claims to be intellectually disabled, a condition formerly known as mentally retarded. In the 1976 case of Jurek v. Texas, the High Court upheld the Texas statute, which made the sentence depend on the jury's answers to three special issues, none of which specifically addressed retardation or even mitigation in the broad sense. In 1989, in the case of Penry v. Linaw, the High Court decided that the Eighth Amendment does not require a categorical exemption from capital punishment for the mentally retarded, but does require the jury to be instructed to consider that circumstance as mitigating. In the 2002 case of Atkins v. Virginia, the Supreme Court changed its mind yet again and decided that a constitutional exclusion is required, effectively deciding that even mild mental retardation necessarily outweighs all aggravating circumstances, regardless of how heinous. The Atkins decision did not define mental retardation. The decision did refer to two definitions widely used at the time. One was the ninth edition of the manual published by the American Association on Mental Retardation, and the other was the fourth edition of the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, known as the DSM-4 for short. In the end, though, the Atkins Court said that, as with insanity, it left to the states the task of developing appropriate ways to enforce the restriction. 2 years after Atkins, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, which is the highest court for criminal cases in that state, implemented the decision in Ex parte Briceño. That court decided that until the Texas legislature specified a definition for capital cases, it would use the definition of retardation in the Health and Safety Code, which was substantially the same as the ninth edition of the AAMR manual. That definition has three components. First, the defendant must have significantly subaverage general intellectual functioning, with significantly subaverage defined as two standard deviations below the mean, which corresponds to an IQ of 70 or below. Second, the defendant must have related deficits in adaptive functioning. Third, the onset must have occurred prior to the age of 18. That is, brain damage or other events occurring in adulthood do not constitute retardation. Given the subjectivity of the adaptive deficits prong, the court also set out a list of seven factors to be considered. And this list of so-called Briseño factors has been the source of much controversy. The list includes such things as whether people who knew the defendant during his developmental period considered him to be retarded, and whether the commission of the offense itself required forethought. In the introductory portion of the opinion, the Briseño court mentioned in passing the character Lenny from John Steinbeck's novel Of Mice and Men. Lenny is not mentioned again in the opinion, and nothing in the opinion states that any part of the test is based on Lenny, regardless of what you may have read in the New York Times. In the course of review of Moore's first death sentence, he was evaluated by a defense psychological expert who diagnosed him as not retarded, but instead as borderline intellectual functioning. That sentence was overturned on other grounds, and Moore was resentenced in the interval between Penry and Atkins. Although he had the right to claim retardation as a mitigating circumstance if his lawyers believed he actually was retarded, they chose not to make that argument or to offer any evidence of retardation. On the contrary, the defense expert testified that Moore was, quote, nowhere near retarded, unquote. Habeas corpus proceedings in state court reviewing the second death sentence occurred after Atkins, and after both of the organizations noted in that case had published new manuals with new definitions. The AAMR renamed itself the American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, or AAIDD, and its new standard omitted the requirement that the adaptive deficits be related to the subaverage intellectual functioning. The same expert who previously testified Moore was not retarded now said he did qualify as intellectually disabled. The trial judge applied the new AAIDD standard and made a finding that Moore was intellectually disabled. The Texas Court of Criminal Appeals found that it was error to apply that new standard rather than the definition established in its precedents. Applying the definition of Briseño to the facts of the case, the court found that Moore is not intellectually disabled. Moore petitioned the U.S. Supreme Court for a writ of certiorari. And in his petition, he asked the Supreme Court to decide whether a state can, quote, prohibit the use of current medical standards on intellectual disability and require the use of outdated standards, unquote. That would be a pure question of law, and it would not depend on the facts of the Moore case, and it would extend far beyond Texas, given that a number of other states have also not adopted the new definitions. However, in Tuesday's argument, Clifford Sloan, the attorney for Moore, began his argument with a list of complaints about the particular rules in Texas. Chief Justice Roberts immediately criticized this laundry list, as he called it, and noted that the court had agreed to take the case solely on the question of old versus new standards. Justice Kennedy also raised that issue and noted that the question presented does not cut to the heart of the case, as counsel for petitioner had described it. Even so, much of the argument that followed focused on the additional Briseño factors and whether they conformed to the clinical definitions in effect at the time Atkins was decided. There was considerable skepticism from the justices about these factors and whether they operated to reduce the class of murderers exempted from capital punishment to a considerably smaller group than would have been recognized as retarded, even under the old standards. At one point in his initial argument, Sloan appeared to concede that the state could use the DSM-4 rather than the DSM-5. Texas Solicitor General Scott Keller pounced on this during his argument, saying that the petitioner had conceded the question he asked the court to decide, and that should be sufficient to resolve the case. In his rebuttal argument, however, Sloan denied that he had conceded this point. From the overall tone of the argument, it appears that Moore may win a remand to reconsider his intellectual disability argument, and the Supreme Court may disapprove the non-clinical Briseño factors. However, it appears unlikely that the court is going to hand down the kind of sweeping rule that the original question presented seemed to ask for, requiring states to adopt each new definition that private organizations come out with. In my view, delegating the definition of a constitutional standard to private organizations would be a problematic and unwise step. Both of the organizations in here are advocacy organizations. The American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities frankly admits to being an advocacy organization. And the American Psychiatric Association is one in reality, invariably taking the defense side in criminal matters. The states of the union should not be required to dance to their tune, and it does not appear that the Supreme Court is poised to require that, at least as to changes that have been made since the Atkins decision. But we will find out in a few months.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.